Good morning. Thank you very much for coming out this morning. I want to thank Oliver Kirshen, as always, even though he's not here, for setting things up, arranging the CME credit. I also want to make sure to apologize up front to Kohanim, who have chosen to be here. You did know. You knew what the topic was. It's not a surprise. But I hope that nothing I say will prove offensive. For those who are taking this for CME credit, please make sure to note it on the sheet. Make sure to note that you're taking it for CME. Also, everybody should please sign in general, because I want to use the opportunity with having everybody's email address to be able to send you emails afterwards, correcting, updating, answering questions that come up during the shiur. So I need to be able to reach you. Okay. You can see on your sheet the four questions that I listed there. Just to expand on each of them, the following vignette for the first one: Aaron is a Kohen. I figured that would be a good name to use. Aaron is a Kohen. He has a lifelong dream of attending medical school. Based on his grades as well as his personal desires, he would seem to be a good candidate to go into medicine. May he attend medical school? Alternatively, could he become an EMT? Asking that as a straight question, understanding that the principal issue we're going to encounter is the issue of tumah, for a kohen to become impure from contact with the dead, the fundamental question of may a kohen attend medical school, may a kohen become an EMT, what would you say? You can always answer, give a preliminary answer. Today, yes. Why?
Less work on actual
in terms of the training in medical school. People are talking all together. You can get away with minimal contact with cadavers in medical school. And what happens? What does happen afterwards? He now becomes a physician, and he has to now work in a hospital setting, and people unfortunately pass away. Doesn't have to work in a hospital. Is it true that the radiologist doesn't need to do any sort of hours in the hospital?
He's training, he would have to.
In training, he would have to. Sorry?
My husband's a radiologist. I'm here to say that is absolutely not true.
It is not true that... Which is not true?
That he would
have to. And here he is.
John, is it true that a radiologist can train
Right, no, that's what he said. That's what he said. That the training he would need to, but afterwards. That was his suggestion. Okay. I mean, that's certainly a principal question, if not the principal question, that we need to address at the outset. But I have a few other cases as well. Sam, 86, is hospitalized with sepsis and resultant multiple organ failure. He codes with cardiac arrest, and his physician, a Kohen, is notified. And the idea in that set of facts is that I want him to be, nothing personal against him, but I want him to be a Goses. The idea being, this is somebody who has reached a stage where he's on his last breaths. That's the term Goses is a reference to somebody who really seems to be past any sort of medical treatment. You may be able to prolong things by a couple of minutes here, a couple of minutes there, but he's at the end. His physician is a Kohen. May his physician come to attempt resuscitation? What would you say? He says yes. Why? Helping somebody to survive. Opposing views?
Are we ignoring the issue of
process? What do you mean?
Discussion.
I'm not talking about someone who's already passed away. I'm talking about someone who's a Goses.
Okay.
He's
no longer
sorry?
He's no longer touch.
You're not supposed to touch a Goses. So, except that if you're treating the Goses medically and you have reason to believe that what you're going to do could be effective, we generally do say to do that treatment. So yeah, I'm taking that as a given. I'm not exploring that whole discussion within this. It's a second question. Third question. Ronald, who is a Kohen, is chief neurologist at a hospital, and he begins to learn about his Jewish heritage, and he's becoming observant. He's not ready to stop working at the hospital, though. Is there anything he can do in the course of his work to mitigate the halachic problem of impurity, of coming in contact with patients who have passed away. Is there anything that he can do? So that's pretty open-ended, so we're going to get that. I'm not going to open that one up, but that's a question. And finally, this is a question that has nothing to do with impurity. Mitch is a Kohen and heart surgeon, and during surgery a patient passes away. Is he eligible to perform Birchas Kohanim? Is he eligible to Duchen? And we'll see why that's a question and how we deal with that. Okay. So you'll notice that in all of the cases, I made the physician a male. That's not an outdated assumption that physicians are males. It's because the laws that we're talking about of impurity are male-specific. If you take a look at source number one on your sheets, it's a Gemara in Kiddushin, Daf Lamed Hei, 35b. Following up on a Mishnah, the Mishnah had said that all prohibitions apply equally to male and female. When the Torah says don't do, it generally applies to male and female, with three exceptions. One of the exceptions is shaving with a razor. Another of the exceptions is cutting the payas on one's head. And then the other exception is balti tamei lemesim, that a kohen should not come in contact with the dead. And take a look in the Gemara in source number one. Balti tamei lemesim dichsiv emor ala kohenim b'nei aharon. The prohibition against becoming impure for the dead is on that list of prohibitions that don't apply for women, because the Torah says, Emor ala kohanim, speak to the kohanim, b'nei Aharon, sons of Aharon. So b'nei Aharon v'lo b'nos Aharon, it only applies to sons of Aaron. To the male kohanim, it doesn't apply to daughters of Aaron. So female kohanim, kohanot if you will, the bas kohen, would be allowed to become tameh, would be allowed to become impure. So this is a male-specific law, and all of this will continue in that vein. Now, yeah, I was thinking when we initially put this on the list of topics for the year, there was a request to deal with this topic, and I thought, well, people are taking this for CME. How relevant is it for a non-Kohen physician? But then I rethought that, number one, because it touches on, as we'll see, the discussion of whether there's a mitzvah to learn medicine. That's going to be part of the discussion about a male Kohen entering medical school. And number two, it has important aspects for those who have Kohen patients. What we're going to say today will be germane as well. And then finally, Yagdil Torah V'yadir, it's always good to learn more Torah. So for that, it is worthwhile. So we have a few central issues we need to address in order to be able to address these practical cases. The first and foremost question is whether a Kohen is allowed to become Tameh today. Is a Kohen allowed to become impure Bisman Hazeh in our day, when at the moment we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, we don't have a temple, and therefore there is no Avodah, there's no service that he's going to be called upon to do momentarily. Theoretically, you know, the Beis HaMikdash is rebuilt, you know, there's an opportunity for the Kohen at that stage to become pure with the Parah Aduma. So could I make the argument that there's no prohibition against the Kohen becoming Tameh today? This has come up in recent centuries on many fronts. One of the best known is the Chasam Sofer's Tshuva. The Chasam Sofer had an issue a couple of hundred years ago. Now it's almost 300 years ago, regarding signing a death certificate at a time when the Hungarian government had decided that, number one, there was an issue of halonas hames. They had to wait a while in order to determine that the person was actually dead. This is an odd reversal of the positions that people have today. Today, the problem is that many rabbis will be in a position of saying, well, halachically, this person isn't deceased yet, and everybody else is saying, no, he's deceased, it's time to bury him. In those days, it was the opposite. What actually happened was the government said, maybe he's not really dead, and you have to wait a period of time and see what happens, and halacha was saying, no, that's halanas hames, that's delaying burial, you have to bury sooner. And as part of that conversation, there was a requirement for a doctor to show up on the scene and sign a death certificate. And the question was, can you summon a Kohen to do this? And and this has applications today for signing a death certificate. So the Chasam Sofer statement was so the person who wrote to the Chasam Sofer wanted to justify it, saying, maybe we're wrong. We think the person has passed away, but maybe the doctor is going to come, take a look at him, and say, no, he's not actually dead. He's still breathing. Or he could be made to breathe, and therefore he's actually still alive. So maybe you're saving a life. So the Chasam Sofer says, if we think he's dead, and yet we justify it as possible, pikuach nefesh, He says the analogous case would be, let's cook on Shabbos, lest an ill person turn out to need food to save his life. He said it's too distant a possibility. We can't really do it on that basis. He did give one heter in which the person who passed away, and in which the government really won't let us bury him, and there's nobody else who can sign the death certificate, and now there's an issue of meis mitzvah, where we have no ability to bury him until someone shows up. So maybe then you could argue the Kohen who's coming to sign it is enabling burial and taking care of a meis mitzvah. So maybe we have a discussion over there. But barring that, it's very difficult to justify the death certificate case. But in any case, it has come up quite a bit in recent generations. And there are two key initial sources we need to see. One is source number two from Maseches Simachos. Simachos is one of the mini Masechtos, the small volumes attached to the Gemara. I want to make sure that, please, before the end, anybody who didn't sign in before, make sure to sign in so we'll be able to follow up. But here's the source in Maseches Simachos. Haya omed v'kover es meso. A person is, or in this case here we're talking about a Kohen, is standing and burying his deceased relative. Adshu omed b'soch hakever mekabel acherim v'kover. Piresh, Hareza, Lo Yitama. If a person is burying his deceased relative, a Kohen is burying his deceased relative, and while he is standing in the grave, it doesn't mean literally in the grave, it means he's there in the cemetery, another body is brought to him, and he buries it. That's okay. However, Piresh, once he leaves his relative, Hareza, Lo Yitama, he may not become impure. Okay, so in other words, he's still there in the cemetery, he's still engaged in burial, he's entitled to then bury somebody else. Once he leaves the cemetery, that's it. Nitma bo bayom. What if he already left the cemetery, and it becomes tamei later that day? Then what's the rule? Rabbi Tarfon Omer Chaya, Rabbi Tarfon says he is liable. Rabbi Akiva Omer Potter. Rabbi Akiva says he's exempt from liability. Rabbi Akiva's rationale is that the process of purification from contact with the dead is a 7-day process, and it'll take the same time regardless of whether he becomes tamei again that day. It doesn't make a difference. He can become tamei again right before sunset that day. It will not delay his purification one iota. Since he became tamei legitimately the first time for his relative, he can now become tamei again later that day, and it doesn't make a difference. That seems to be the position of Rabbi Akiva. And Rabbi Tarfon says no. Rabbi Tarfon says you can't add it to your tumah, even though it's not going to delay the process of purification. That's the first debate there, and then they get to conclude by saying, Nitma la'acharoso yom, hakomodim shu chayav mipnei shu soser yom echad. If he becomes impure later on in the week, so now he is delaying his process of purification, then everybody agrees that he's going to be liable. Yes?
How does Rabbi Akiva's position jive with Pirush HaRezel?
No, the first source said once he left, he shouldn't become impure. So presumably that's going to be in line with Rabbi Tarfon. Right, that's going to be in line with Rabbi Tarfon.
Yeah.
The Tanakhama will have to be in line with Rabbi Tarfon, not with Rabbi Akiva. Right. So I have a debate between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon about becoming impure where it will not delay your purification. Practical ramification today is, again, for someone to become impure again, does not delay his purification. There's no difference for someone.
There is no opportunity for purification.
Correct. We don't have para aduma. So therefore, maybe I should argue that we're going to follow the view of Rabbi Akiva and say that a person can become impure because a kohen can become impure because, after all, it's not going to make a difference for his purification process in any case. That's one source to know about. Unfortunately, that's not the only one. The other one we need to know about is the Gemara in Nazir, and that's source number three. I only say unfortunately because this one's a little bit harder than that one. That one was a straightforward debate and very easily comprehended. This one's going to take a little work. Itmar, we learned. Amar Rabba, Amar Rav Huna. Rabba says, I'm going to tell you what Rav Huna said. Remember, Rabba is not speaking for himself. He's explaining Rav Huna. That's going to matter. I underlined and bolded in the Hebrew, I bolded in the English, because we're going to need to remember who says what, and I wanted it to be easy to find. So Rabba says, citing Rav Huna, Mikra Male Diber HaKasuf. He says, the Torah says explicitly Lo yitama. He, this is regarding a Nazir, but we link the Tumah of a Nazir and the Tumah of a Kohen. So the Torah says, he shall not become Tameh. And it also says, Lo Yavo, Kishu Omer Lo Yavo, he shall not come to a dead body. So why does it say it twice? Lahazhiro al Hatuma, Lahazhiro al Habia, to teach that he should not become impure by contact with the dead, and he also shouldn't enter the room in which the body is found. Aval Tumah Vitumalo, but Rabba says, Rav Huna says, that Tumah Vitumah, becoming Tameh and then becoming Tameh again, is not prohibited. That's okay. He's allowed to gain repeat Tumah. If he's impure already, he can become impure again. That's the way Rabba explains Rav Huna. Rav Yosef Amar, on the other hand, Rav Yosef declared, Ha'elokim, he says, by God, that's not true. It's an oath. He says, Amar Rav Huna afilu Tumah Vitumah. He says, Rav Huna prohibits adding to existing impurity as well. There's no difference between whether you became Tameh the first time or whether you became Tameh again. He says that's prohibited too. The Amar Rav Huna, he says, I'll prove it to you. You know what Rav Huna said? Nazir shoy omed bebeis hakvaros v'oshitu lo mesa u'meis acher. If a Nazir is in a cemetery and they give him his relative who had passed away, as well as another one, v'naga bo, and he touched him, chayiv, he's going to be liable. That's the position he's associating with Rav Huna, which is now stricter than everything we saw in Maseches Semachos. He's saying, even though the Nazir, / Kohen, is in the cemetery legitimately to bury his relative, and it's the same day, even still it's going to be prohibited. The Amai, why is that so? Hamitame v'koyim, he's already Tame. Elalav, Shmamina, Amar Rav Huna, Filu Tumah V'Tumah. We see that Rav Huna says, even if he's already Tame, he may not become Tameh again. So Rav Yosef says, Rabba said that Rav Huna believes he can become Tameh a second time. Rav Yosef says that Rav Huna believes that he may not become Tameh a second time. That's the debate between Rabba and Rav Yosef. Along comes Abaye, who is a student of Rav Yosef, and he challenges Rav Yosef. Esve Abaye, Abaye. Abaye challenges Rav Yosef. The words in brackets in the Hebrew I added in order just to make the Gemara a little more comprehensible. Abaye challenges Rav Yosef. We learned, Kohen Shahayo lo meis munach al ketefo, voshitu lo meisa u meis acher v'nogabo. If a Kohen is in contact with, I'm simplifying the case from the Hebrew, if a Kohen is in contact with a body of a relative of his, and they send him also another body, the nagabo, and he touches it, yachol yechayev, I might think that he would be liable. Tamalomar velo yechalel, no, because the Torah says regarding a Kohen, he shall not desecrate his status. Bimish eino mechulal, that refers to someone who previously was not desecrated, and now he's going to become desecrated by becoming impure. Yatza zeshu mechulal veomed, which excludes the case of somebody who already is desecrated. So Abaye says to Rav Yosef, you're telling me that Rav Huna believes you can't become Tameh a second time? What are you talking about? Why not? The Pasuk says, Lo Yechalel, if he is fine, he can't desecrate himself. But where he's not desecrated, where he already is, where he's already Tameh, what's the big deal? To which Rav Yosef replies, well, I have a Mishnah that supports me. Rav Yosef says, Amar Lei, V'tikshi Lach Mas Nisin. What do you do with the Mishnah that says, Disnan Hayem Mitame Lemesim Kolayom Eino Chayev Ela Achas? That if someone is becoming impure all day long, he continually is going in and out of the cemetery, he's only liable once. However, Amar Lo Al Titma, if they warn him each time he goes in, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it, Chayev Kol Achas V'Achas, he's liable each time. So that tells me that you do become Tameh from multiple exposures. Assuming you get a warning each time, you'll actually be liable. You'll not only become Tameh, you're liable for multiple exposures.
So why would they warn him each time if he already... In other words, it's assuming that they know, these warners know that there's a mitzvah that he... There's a lot...
For
them to warn, but that's a circular argument because...
These are people who warned him because for any reason under the sun. In other words, they warned him because they don't like him and they want to see him become liable multiple times. They warned him because they think that that's their imperative. They warned him because they have nothing better to do. It doesn't matter for our purposes. Their motivation is not relevant. Yes.
Because Cohen's
pathologist,
he has to do it. He has to do it.
Right. we're going to get to the doctor. We're on the case law first, but then we'll have to apply it to the doctor.
Or these could be at different cemeteries. Second set of mourners don't know if they're
right. Well, actually, the assumption is same cemetery because of the idea that he hasn't left it in between. Actually, no, he has left it. I'm sorry. So it could be separate cemeteries. That's true.
Or different people who witnessed
it. Yeah, so that could be too. That could be too. Or it could just be that these are people who want to give him a hard time. Avi.
I thought another can be
the Tamil Mitzvah. Yeah. The Tamil Mitzvah. Alright, so I'll give you a mitzvah case. I mean, this last one is a Kohen anyway.
The case that
we started with. The,
He's getting his parts and the mitzvah is after.
Right, unless the answer is Nazir Shomei Beis HaKavaros illegally, and then they gave him Mesa or Mes Acher, and the answer is either one. In other words, to distinguish from a Kohen, we're saying this is not a Kohen. This is a case where he was in the Beis HaKavaros, and they gave him any Mesa, whether Mesa or Mes Acher. Right. Right, no, that's true. But the argument is, but Mitmavaka, in other words, he's liable, there's no question that he's liable for going into the cemetery. He went into the cemetery, he's standing there. Now, they give him any mace, whether his own or mace acher, like you're saying, for a nazir, it doesn't make a difference. And what we're saying is, he's liable, even though he's already tamei. And therefore, I would have argued, if you believe that there's no such thing as repeat tuma, he shouldn't be liable. That would be the way to read the case.
Rabbi, Yabo and Tuma.
Correct.
Correct.
So Rav Yosef says, you don't like my interpretation of Rav Huna. What are you going to do with a Mishnah that says explicitly that you're liable each time you go into the cemetery, so long as you have unique warnings, you're going to be liable each time? To which the Gemara says, El Akasha Ahadadi. Well, great. Does that mean that we have contradictory sources? No. Lo Kasha, no problem. You think so? Kan Bechiburin. It depends on whether he is still attached to the original impurity at the time or not. Meaning, there's a difference between someone standing in a cemetery such that he is still tamei, or he's touching a dead body, and then he touches another one. There we're willing to say that he hasn't violated an additional prohibition, as opposed to somebody who was in contact with a dead body, left it, remained impure, but he's no longer in contact. And then he goes back in again, like the case of the one who went in and out of the cemetery. We're going to distinguish between the two and say it's possible that maybe your liability is, you have multiple liability only if you come in contact multiple times. So to sum up what we have here in these cases. Number one, we saw in source number two, a debate between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon about liability if you become a Tameh on separate, if you become Tamei on the same day. Rabbi Akiva says, if it's the same day, you can become Tamei again. Rabbi Tarfon says, no, you may not. That's number one. Number two is the debate here between Rabba and Rav Yosef about what Rav Huna said. And we suggest a couple of possible distinctions. Rabba first seemed to say, if you're already Tamei, Rav Huna says you could become Tamei again. And Rav Yosef says, that's not true. And then we have a possibility of another way to read the debate between Rabba and Rav Yosef, that the debate is specifically where you are no longer in contact with the mace. But if you're in contact with it, that's going to be a different story. We're going to come back to how to read Rabba and Rav Yosef. We're not done with them. And it's going to matter, so you can't drop this just because we're moving on to the next source. The debate that we see in the Gemara comes up between the Rambam and his chief antagonist, the Ravid, Rabbi Avraham ben David. If you take a look at source number four. Yeah.
I don't understand the third possibility, but I can wait.
Yeah, wait, because I'm going to come back to it. The Rambam in source number four talks about a Nazir. Nitma lemeis pa'amim harbe. If he becomes Tamei multiple times, im hishru bo kol pam upam v'hu mitamei loke al kol achas v'achas. If they gave him a warning each time, he's getting malkos each time. Ba'med devar ma'amur, when is that true? B'shenitma upiresh v'chaza v'naga onasa o ha'ehil. That's assuming that the and this I didn't translate directly in the English because it was extra verbiage for our purposes. But he says that assumes that he became tamei, then he separated from impurity, and then he went back and became tamei again. Contact carrying a mace, overshadowing the dead body. But if he's touching a dead body and it's still in his hand, and then he touches another one, he's only liable once. Even if they warn him multiple times, it doesn't matter, it's too late, the chilul already happened. So the Rambam accepts the idea that if you're still in contact with the body, then you'd be allowed to come in contact, or you wouldn't get lashes for coming into contact with another body. Right? That he is willing to accept. Take a look at the Ravid in source number 5, and he says, that's not true. He says, Iyanti bishmua b'meseches nazir. You'll see this is the last source that I translated. That's because the rest of them are easy. And because it was already a 12:45 last night. But he says, Iyanti bishmua b'meseches nazir v'ra'isi d'ladas v'b Yosef tumma b'chiburin shal adam b'meis. He says, I learned that Gemara Nazir. And I saw that Rabbi Yosef's view is that Tumah b'chiburin, if you're still attached to the first body, then you're only liable once. The Rabba Paligale, and Rabba disagreed with him. Behold, Tumah v'tumah. He said, when you're dealing with each successive Tumah, afilu shalo b'chiburin eno chayev ala achas. Even if you're no longer attached to the first one, you're still only liable once. Ho'el v'tamehu, because he's still tameh. So he says, I saw that Rabba does not say you need to still be in contact with the first one. The kevan dekai malon, Rabba v'Rav Yosef, hilchasa k'Rabba, since the rule is, the rule that we follow is that when Rabba debates Rav Yosef, the law follows Rabba. So therefore, we will be lenient. Me'ata, based on this, Tuma v'tuma, afilu piresh v'chazer v'naga, potter. If someone becomes tamei repeatedly, the Kohen becomes tamei repeatedly, even though he separated from the tumah, he was no longer in contact after the first one, nonetheless, he's going to be potter, he will be exempt from liability. That Kohenim bizman azed tamei meis heim. And he says, Kohenim nowadays are tamei from the dead. We know that everybody at this point has, one way or another, driven under a tree outside a cemetery, or, you know, touch someone who had just been with a body, or went into a cemetery for a relative, or whatever it is. Everyone is going to be impure today. So he says, "Ve'od ein alein chiyuv tuma." They no longer have a liability for tuma. V'amachayim osam alav lahavi raya. And if you think that they are going to be liable, you better bring proof because you haven't so far. So says the Ravid. The Ravid is not one to mince words. Yes.
Is there a distinction between chayav and asur?
Yes, and we're going to come back to that. Good point. So the Ravid says that this is straightforward. It was a debate between Rabba and Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef says you're only exempt if you're actually still in contact with the first body. Rabba says you're exempt even if you aren't in contact with the first body. We follow Rabba against Rav Yosef. Simple and straightforward. Therefore, Kohanim can become Tamei again and be at least Potur, if not Mutter. We have to still discuss that. However, Rav Yosef Karo explains the position of the Rambam in source number 6. He says, maybe I could explain the Rambam this way. Rambam knows the rule that Rabba versus Rav Yosef, you follow Rabba. That's not news to him. However, Yesh Lomar in source number 6, you could say, Shadaz Rabbeinu, that the view of our master, the Rambam, is, Dichyamrinan Rabba v'Rav Yosef halacha k'Rabba, hanimiliki if ligu aliba dinafshayu. He says, you could say, that's a mistake in my source, that aliba twice. You could say that we say the law follows Rabba over Rav Yosef when it's their own debate. Rabba says this, Rav Yosef says that. But I made sure to point out when we read the source in Nazir that that's not what's going on. But where they're debating about someone else's position, they're debating what did Rav Huna say, that law may go out the window. Here they're debating about what Rav Huna said. I meant to change that, I did not. That's Shemos, so please be careful with source number 6. Since Rav Yosef declared, by God this is so, the mashma de dikdek b'shmua soyafa. It sounds like he must have been really sure that Rav Huna said, what he believed, Rav Huna said, v'naktinan kabasei, and we will therefore follow his position. So the statement of the Kesef Mishnah is, this may not follow the rule that we always follow Rava against Rav Yosef, because really the debate was within Rav Huna's position, and Rav Yosef was really sure of himself. So don't be so confident, Ravid, that we're going to follow the lenient view of Rava. The same debate between the Rambam and the Ravid shows up in Hilchos Avel in source number 7. It's a shorter form of it. And the Rambam writes, Nitma mikodem ve'achar kach nifnas la'oel. If someone was impure and then he entered a rude structure in which there was a body, im hisru bo lo ka'afal habia. If he was warned, he gets lashes for entering. Because again, multiple entries into this space, multiple liability, and the Ravid in source number 8 says, "Bahalo michvar." He says, it's not so, that's not clear at all. Desuya deshmaisa kerabba. Our discussion followed Rabba. The tumah v'tumah shaloba chiburin, nami lo machayev. Rabba says, you are not liable for multiple exposures to impurity. Even if you had already separated from it, v'kolshkin b'chiburin, and certainly if you are still in contact with the dead. So the same debate between Rambam and Ravid. Now, when we started this CME series a few years ago, we wanted to also include a little bit of lumdus. It wasn't just a practical shiur. So I'm going to add one quirk from the Lecha Mishnah. The Lecha Mishnah says that this debate between the Rambam and the Ravid is actually a debate between Rashi and Tosfos back in source number 2. You see, there are two ways you can read this. And Michael, this is where I'm coming back to your question to clarify. There are two ways I can read the Gemara's conclusion about the debate between Rabba and Rav Yosef. One way I could read the conclusion, and this is Rashi's approach, and this is what the Ravid was saying, is that Rabba permits whether connected to the body or not, and Rav Yosef only permits if you're still connected to the body. However, Tosfos in that Gemara, and this is the view of the Rambam, disagrees and says that Rabba only permits in the Chiburin case, where you're still connected to the original body. And the Rambam is saying, and Tosfos is saying, that Rav Yosef prohibits even if you are connected to the original body. Maybe Rav Yosef only permits. Maybe Rabba only permits where you are actually in contact with the original body. In other words, according to this, no one, neither Rabba nor Rav Yosef, is actually going to permit once you leave the cemetery. Right? You follow what I'm saying? According to this understanding, to the Lecha Mishnah's understanding, neither Rabba nor Rav Yosef actually permitted once you left the cemetery. And therefore, your whole discussion about do we follow Rabba or do we follow Rav Yosef is irrelevant for a Kohen today, unless he's actually standing in the cemetery. But otherwise, our answer is going to be that Kohen is not entitled to repeat Tumah at all. Rav Goren had another idea. Rav Shlomo Goren in Israel wanted to say that it's the debate between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon in source number 2, but I'm going to stop. I'm not going to go that far with this piece. One other note, though, that's fascinating from a historical perspective, and I gave you an article to look at. It's source number 9. It has a link to it. This is fascinating from a historical perspective. You see, the Chasam Sofer discusses this issue and wants to know, critical question, can I rely on this Ravid? Okay, can I rely on the Ravid to say that someone who is already impure from contact with the dead could go back and become impure again? Is that reliable? And he says, you know what? I was discussing this issue and debating this issue and dealing with this issue, and then 30 years after this issue came up, I found the Sefer Tamim Deim. Tamim Deim records responsa of early authorities, including many, many by the Ravid, and I found that in the Tamim Deim, the Ravid wrote that he recanted. The Ravid changed his mind. So he says, that's what he says in there. However, a friend of mine, Rabbi Yaakov Jaffe, in an article I happened across last night while looking for something else, writes in this article, it is upon him to bring proof, which is pulled from the Ravid's source there, that it's not necessarily so. You see, there's a whole history to the publication of Tamim Deim. It's not a simple and straightforward thing. But the key thing to know, the digest out of this very well-written six-page article, is that the piece that's in Tamim Deim actually is taken from his comments to the Rif, which were written before his comments on the Rambam. Okay, the Ravid wrote comments on the Rif, Rabbi Yitzchak Alfasi, and he also wrote his comments on the Rambam. His comments to the Rif came first. So in other words, if he's recanting from anything, he's recanting from what he wrote in Tzmim Deyim. In Tzmim Deyim, he may have said, Kohanim are not allowed to become impure, but his later comment was the one on the Rambam saying they are allowed to become impure. So if there's any recanting going on, it's the comment on the Rambam, he's actually becoming more lenient in his older age, not more stringent. That's number one. Number two, he doesn't think there's any recanting at all, because the context of the comment in Tzmim Deyim is a comment on the Rif. If you take a look at source number 10, the Rif quoted a Mishnah in Makos, which says, "Hayimetame lemesim kol hayom eino chayev ela achas." If he's becoming tame all day long, repeatedly, he's only liable once. Amru lo al titma, if they say to him repeatedly, don't become impure. V'hayimetame, and he became impure anyway. Chayev kol achas v'achas, he's liable each time. The Ravid is bothered because the Rif only quotes this source without any comment about tumah bechiburin, about what if you're touching the body. And the Ravid therefore says in his comment in Tzmim Deyim, he says, you can't leave it that way. You have to mention bechiburin. You have to mention being in contact with the dead. So the Chasan Sofer sees that and says, aha, that means the Ravid recanted. Because all the Ravid mentioned in his comment on the Rif was about being in contact with the dead. The Ravid did not mention anything about becoming impure when you're no longer in contact with the dead. That's what the Chasam Sofer says. To which the authors of this article say, that's true, but that's because he was talking to the Rif. He said the Rif is taking his position. The Rif doesn't believe in what the Ravid has said. He doesn't ask him like Rabba, the lenient view, but at least he should mention Rav Yosef about Tumah Bechiburin. I realize that I may have lost some people with the back and forth there. It's Sunday morning and it's early. But the point is that the Chasam Sofer's statement that the Ravid recanted is not necessarily so. The Ravid may only have been speaking within the view of Rav Yosef. It may not have been his own view, number one. And number two, that was before he made his comment on the Rambam. The upshot is, as far as we are concerned from a practical perspective, that we have a debate between the Rambam and the Ravid about whether one is permitted to become Tameh nowadays. Where the Kohen who has already become Tameh may, according to the Ravid, possibly continue to become Tameh. According to the Rambam, he may not. Now, the question was asked, are you sure the Ravid actually permits it? Maybe the Ravid only means that it is potter, you're not liable for doing so, but maybe you're not allowed to do it lechatchila. So, Rav Moshe Feinstein addressed this, among others. The Chasam Sofer discusses it, the Dagol Miravava discusses it. The Dagol Miravava quotes the Note of Yehuda, Rabbi Cheska Landau, saying that it's not so clear, that in fact, indeed, it may only mean you're not liable if you did it. The Chasam Sofer says that his Rebbe, Rav Nosson Adler, actually convinced the Note of Yehuda that the Ravid only meant that it's prohibited rabbinically rather than biblically. On the other hand, Rav Moshe Feinstein, in a response regarding bone grafts using material from a cadaver, said that's not what the Ravid said. If you take a look at source number 11, he says, V'chasim sofer, simen shin la b'ches, hevi me arrive at atzmo, b'sefer t'mim deyim, sheish isur de araisa. The V'chasim sofer quotes from the Ravid in t'mim deyim to argue that there is a biblical prohibition, v'tama ani tuva. But he says, I am shocked. He says, how could you tell me that the Ravid, writing in the 12th century, only meant to say, when the Ravid said his statement, right? If you go back and look at the Ravid's wording in source number 5, he says, you can't tell me that the Ravid writing at the end of the 12th century, beginning of the 13th century, is talking about whether you're getting lashes or not. There is no such thing as malkos, as lashes for a kohen in the 12th century. That doesn't exist. Even though the Ravid used the terminology, one who would say they are liable has to prove it, which indicates that he only means they're exempt from liability, but not that it's entirely permitted. He says it's not so. The Ravid wouldn't have made the comment if all he meant was exemption from lashes. There are no lashes. So Moshe says the Ravid means mutter. He does not mean potter, he means mutter. There is a nice long debate on this. It's not important for us right now. The general assumption is that Moshe said the Ravid means mutter. Okay? So what we have if the ins and outs of that were a lot for this early on a Sunday morning, the practical upshot is Ravid says mutter, Rambam says aser. Most authorities halachically support the Rambam against the Ravid in the read of that Gemara and say that if you're not still connected to the body, the Kohen is not allowed to become Tameh a second time, but the Ravid's minority position exists. That's one thing to know about. That's the major central issue we needed to discuss. There are a couple of other issues we need to touch on, though, before we can get to practical applications. We are dealing here in Toronto, in Ontario, in Canada, with a situation in which most of the people in the hospital are not Jewish. Right? This is a fair assumption. Most of the bodies that a Kohen might come in contact with in a training session, in a hospital session, are not Jewish. So one of the questions is, what sort of tumah could be involved? Because we distinguish between Akum and Yisrael when it comes to the tumah of the body. So take a look at source number 12. Tanya. This is a brisa. V'chein ayir Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai Omer kivrei ovde kochavim einon mitamin ba'ohel. Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai ruled that tumas ohel does not apply. Tumas ohel means you're in the same room as the body. He says tuma is not communicated by the oved kochavim's body, by his body. Ravina Omar nihid ma'atinu krame etzmuya ba'ohel dichsev adam kiyamus ba'ohel mimago masa mima'atinu kra. Ravina qualifies that and says that's true in terms of tuma being in the same space. However, you touch the body, you do become impure. You do gain tuma by contact with the body of the akum. Why this is so and how it's learned from the pasuk is a great discussion, but not for right now. That's Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. Source number 13, Mishnah and Alos. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel disagrees. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel says, If a Kohen goes into a city where the population was not Jewish, and the city is now in ruins, and there might be bodies in the buildings, so he says, Ein ba mishum medor ovdei kochavim. There is no concern about walking into the buildings for a Kohen. Why? Because the assumption is the city's been in ruins, animals got in, any body that was there has already been taken by the animals, and you're okay. That's not the point. The point is that Shimon ben Gamliel is concerned, theoretically, about Tuma from an Akum by being in the same building. So Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel disagrees with Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. In practice, Rabbeinu Tam followed Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel and said they do communicate Tuma in an Ohel. The Rambam follows Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai and says no, they don't. The Shulchan Aruch in source 14, Kivrei Ovdei Kochavim Nachon Li Zaher Akoy Milelech Aleim. The Mechaber, Rabbi Yosef Karo, says it will be better for a Kohen not to go into the cemetery, even though what you're really talking about is Tumas Ohel, and you're talking about a non-Jewish one. We're not talking about a Jewish one. So he says, even despite what the Rambam said, better not to. And the Rama says, Avo Pisha Yesh Mekilin, although there are those who are lenient, like, for example, the Rambam, Nachol Mahachmir, it's better to be strict. So what they say is, the Kohen really shouldn't be wandering into that cemetery, but if he does, frankly, he has someone to depend on. The Rambam is good enough for me. Now that's Tumas Ohel. That's Tumah from being in the same root structure. What about Tumah from contact?
If you go by that, then Kohenim would go to temples and enter the...
In a non-Jewish cemetery.
Oh,
in a non-Jewish cemetery. The Jewish body definitely communicates Tumas Ohel. That one wasn't a question. Now, what about contact? So, Ravina in source number 12 said contact does apply, as does the Rambam. It's source 15. Echad ames mi Yisrael, omen ha'akum mitame b'mago v'masa. We assume that they do communicate to him on contact. There is a dissenting voice, the Urayim, Rabbi Lazar Mitz, who's a student of Rabbeinu Tam, does cite a brisa to argue that we follow Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, also regarding Maga, and there is no communication of Tumah there. Unclear whether he means there's no Tumah or that a Kohen isn't liable. Rabbi Yitzhak Alevi Herzog noted that that's not so clear cut. But in the end, we do say, we generally assume that there is Tumah from an Akum, the Bimaga, on contact. So, second issue that we need to understand, aside from the question of whether he may become Tameh, is this that the Akum's body according to many poskim, according to many authorities, will not communicate tumah if you're in the same root structure. So, for example, the kohen goes to medical school and stands there watching the dissection, but doesn't touch the body, and the body is someone who is in akum, who's not Jewish. Then tumah is not. Then he may not have violated anything in. He may not have violated anything in doing so. Even touching it, according to one view, may not violate anything. Granted, we tend not to follow that view. Granted also that we said it's better to be strict in general about tumah, even ba'ohel. Esther.
Well, how do they define contact? Like, if you put a stethoscope on the chest, your hands actually have contact with the patient physically. Is that contact? Or if you have thick gloves, is that contact?
That's a really good question. It's clear that touching it physically, you know, skin to skin, is contact. Touching it with a stethoscope is an interesting question because there's an issue of tumah being communicated via metal. Cherev Hariyu Kachalal is the principle that touching it with a metal implement may also convey it. However, where you're touching a rubber part of it, that's a different discussion. I would have to look into it. I can't answer it offhand, but it's a good question that's worth looking into. So I'm going to actually try to do some research on that afterwards, and I'll reiterate that if you sign up and put your email address down, I'll be able to let you know afterwards. I don't know.
And gloves?
And gloves would be a similar question. It's a good question. I don't have an answer offhand. So that's our second issue. Yes, Avi?
I thought you said in the summer just now that even as much reliant.
There is the view of the Urayim. We tend not to use it, but there is such a view. Right, the Urayim was that last bit that I quoted. I rushed through it a little bit. Rabbi Lazar admits. I didn't bring him on the source sheet. Quoting the Medrash in Taras Kohanim. If you want, I can give it to you afterwards. I can give you the source. I can email it to you if you remind me. But yeah, there is such a position. Now, Gaz Mamonios even quotes it on the Rambam. Okay. Third issue, and then we'll get to practical, because it's late enough, is the issue of whether Kohanim today are Kohanim at all. Right? Could it be argued that today we don't really know who is a Kohen anyway? There was an article in the journal Hamelitz in 1884 in which that argument was made to be more lenient. The Aruch HaShulchan discussing Pinyon Ben said, come on, you got to be kidding me. In source number 16, it's a great discussion there, but I'm going to skip it for interest of time. But take a look at it. He's very strong in his language. His discussion there is regarding the suggestion that maybe Kohanim, who are involved in a Pinyon HaBen, right, they receive the coins in redemption of the child, maybe they should be obligated to return the money afterwards to the person who did the redemption, because they don't really know that they're Kohanim, and they might be holding money inappropriately. And not only that, when they have their need for a pinyon ben, when they have a son, they should separate money and give it to themselves. Maybe they're Kohanim, maybe they're not Kohanim. Or maybe they should give it to somebody else who may not be a Kohen. It's a whole discussion. So the Aruch HaShulchan says, come on. He says, God forbid. It doesn't make any sense. No. Because you can make the argument, as he notes himself, that there's nothing to prove that it's from this antecedent. Within the line. It doesn't prove that it's Aaron. It could be someone later in the line. It could be someone earlier in the line. The fact that we find it only with those is a nice indication of something, but it's certainly not a proof that this person is a Kohen. It's a lot of fun. But the Aruch HaShulchan says, the Aruch HaShulchan's argument is that in the time of Nehemiah, they're willing to say that you had a chazakah, you ate truma, you ate truma before, so therefore you're allowed to continue to eat truma, and we'll treat you as though you were a Kohen. He said, we're in a better position now to permit this than they were, in the sense that, number one, we have the chazakah, they've been doing it, and number two, no one today has a book of lineage. In those days, some people had a book of lineage saying, I am descended from Kohanim, and some people did not. And we accepted even those who didn't have a book of lineage, even though you might have argued, well, if you were really a Kohen, you would have kept it. Nowadays, no one has it. So he says, come on, you can't really be serious about this suggestion. However, it is worth noting, Rabbi J. David Bleich, in Halacha Refuah, the third volume, he does note another source. What happens is, in the 18th century, 19th century, there's a great debate about restarting the service in the Beis HaMikdash without a Beis HaMikdash. whether you could bring Karban Pesach and so on. Or it's Yerush Kalasher says, sure you can, absolutely. And there, every rabbi under the sun disagrees with him for different reasons. And one of the arguments that's brought is, we don't have Kohanim anymore. We don't have Kohanim we know to be Kohanim. So Rabbi J. David Bleich says, they're willing to argue, we don't have Kohanim. So if they're willing to argue it for that, maybe they should make the argument for this. However, if you take a look at source 17, you find in the Medrash that we do in fact have different standards for working in the Beis HaMikdash than for other things. So it's possible to argue he's not considered a Kohen for working in the Beis HaMikdash, but he is a Kohen as far as not becoming Tamei. So that's just another note. There was an article by the Maharash Dam in which he dealt with the question of whether a Kohen can marry a woman who may have been involved with an illicit relationship. The question of whether the Kohen may marry her or not, and he did present the possible argument that there you had witnesses who said that nothing happened, number one, and number two, maybe he's not really a Kohen. So therefore it's a specs fake, it's a double doubt. So the Maharash Dam, he did have such an idea. Rabbi Yitzhak Levi Herzog discusses this. There's more to say on that, but I'm going to leave that. As is. We have three central issues then. One, Rambam versus Ravid. Are you allowed to become impure nowadays? Number two, what kind of impurity will even come from the body? Tumas Ohel, according to the Rambam, doesn't exist if the person isn't Jewish. And then third, maybe the Kohanim aren't really Kohanim. So let's look at now, let's look at applying this. Medical school study. Could I argue that going to medical school is a mitzvah and therefore should override any of my concerns? So the trend in halachic authorities is to say that whatever mitzvah you want to identify with going to medical school, it's not pikuach nefesh. It's not called saving a life. The reason is very simple, really, when you think about it. If I were to say that going to medical school was pikuach nefesh, all of us, doctors and non-doctors, doesn't make a difference, would be obligated to go to medical school. If you really believe that it's pikuach nefesh, then saving a life is an obligation for everybody. Everybody should be obligated to go study medicine, which we don't say. It's just from a logical perspective. I do have... Yeah, that's a separate issue. That's called kibud avim. And that is pikuach nefesh for the son. But that's a different story.
Apply that to learning CPR.
We do apply it to learning CPR. That's correct. We have obligations to study medicine for numerous things. Number one, for my own preservation, right? Like the Gemara in Shabbos, Pei Beis, about Rav Chisda giving shiurim about health. So we say there that you're supposed to learn medicine to be able to preserve your health. You have to know how to take care of yourself. I have a separate obligation, according to the Rambam in the fifth chapter in Shmona Prakim, of learning medicine in order to appreciate God's creation. That's not the same thing, though, as making it a pikuach nefesh level obligation. And generally, the analogy is tzedaka, and Rav Moshe brings that here in source number 19, where he says the argument of pikuach nefesh is, to quote him, shtus vehevel. He says it's foolishness and emptiness. He says it's like tzedakah. We don't say that you're obligated to go make more money so that you can redeem captives if anybody turns out to be a captive. If someone is a captive, then you have an obligation to spend the money you have in order to redeem him. But we don't say, go make money in order to be able to redeem captives when they come up. It's just not so. Rav Herschel Schachter said this to me also. I gave a shiur, actually it was in this building, it's now about 2.5 years ago, so you're okay if you don't remember it. I'd barely remember it. On the physician's obligation to heal. And I raised the question there of maybe you're obligated to learn medicine in order to be able to heal people. So I asked Rav Schachter, who was there that day, about it, and he said no. He said that there's no obligation to heal. Rav Adin Steinsaltz has a video on YouTube in source number 18, you can see it, in which he also says, he doesn't cite any sources, he simply says, no, you're not obligated to learn medicine. Rabbi J. David Bleich, in an article in Halacha or Refuah, volume 3, explains that there are two reasons why. He says, everybody else just says, no, it can't be. But Rabbi Bleich offers two reasons why. Number one, he goes back to the Noda Yehuda on autopsy, who says that if you don't have an ill person in front of you to save, it's not called pikuach nefesh. So the question is, well, how in front of you do you need? But for sure that's not going to apply to somebody who hasn't even gone to medical school yet. He's not saving anybody for years. That's number one. Number two is that pikuach nefesh only overrides prohibitions if that's the only way to save the life. There are other physicians. If this colleague doesn't go to medical school, granted we have a principle that you never know which doctor is going to be successful. That's true. However, it's a far cry to say that this person who hasn't even gone to medical school yet is going to be the one to be able to save people. He says that's not an argument. The answer is you have many doctors who are not calling him. You find some other way to save lives. There are other ways that you can be a lifesaver. You don't need to go save lives doing this. So pikuach nefesh does not apply as a justification. That said, Rabbi Shlomo Goren came up with a very interesting idea based on what we've said about impurity. And it goes back to the point about metal. He came up with the idea of taking a metal bracelet into a cemetery and letting it become impure. And the argument is that even though a Kohen is not allowed to become impure, he is allowed, potentially, and this is based in Shulchan Aruch, to touch a piece of metal that has itself touched a body. When we talk about which types of impurity are forbidden to him, that one may not be forbidden to him. And therefore, he can now wear this metal bracelet as he goes about his business. Leave aside people who don't like men wearing bracelets. That's not important for our discussion. He can wear this metal bracelet. He is constantly in contact with impurity. Remember the discussion from the Gemara in Nazir? And now he can do whatever he needs to do. He's Bechiburin the entire time. So wrote Rav Goren on this. Rav Levi Yitzchak Halperin wrote a long response to him, arguing against him, as did several others. It's worth noting that Rav Goren originally wrote this to there's a whole discussion about this. Did I bring it on your sheet? I didn't bring it on the sheet. But Rav Goren originally wrote this saying it's only for Sh'as Hadchak. This is meant to be only if you're stuck. By which I think he probably means someone who already went through medical school and is now practicing, and this is a way to mitigate his situation. I suspect that's what he meant. Others disagree with it. It's beyond the scope of the shiur, or the shiur would be 2 hours long instead of an hour, or whatever it's going to be. But I found it fascinating, and it's worth exploring. It's not a simple and straightforward thing. The tendency of most authorities is indeed to prohibit, with the caveat that it might be acceptable outside of Israel, and without doing hands-on dissection. That's the other point. In other words, if he can say I'm outside of Israel, therefore logically you can say that most of the bodies, and the assumption would be of any given body, is not Jewish, and I stay away from contact, I'm only within the same root structure, then you could actually make the argument that he would be allowed to go to medical school. But then we have another step. Because let's say he goes to medical school, and then he goes into practice. He's now going to come into a situation where he works in a hospital, and eventually it's going to happen. There's going to be a body of a Jew there in the hospital. Or he's going to be called upon to actually work with someone who's going to die on the operating table, so to speak. He's going to be working in the ER, someone's going to pass away. Don't I have to worry about that? Even if I manage to get through medical school. Chasam Sofer says no. He says, you remember the discussion in the Gemara about getting on a ship 3 days before Shabbos? Where we say that if you get on the ship more than 3 days before Shabbos, you don't have a problem. And even if you get on within 3 days before Shabbos, where there is a prohibition, it's a longer discussion. According to Ramban, the prohibition isn't about, well, maybe you'll have to break Shabbos in the event that something happens on the ship. And people permit you to get on a boat within 3 days of Shabbos for the sake of a mitzvah, even though something may happen on the ship, and now you may need, like you're going on the Italian cruise ship from that I read about last night. That may well happen. Nonetheless, you do not need to be concerned when you get on the boat that something might happen. So here too, the same principle will apply. Not everybody agrees with this. So Chaim David Halevi and Asel Harab disagreed, and he said that when you're working in a hospital, it's guaranteed there are going to be mason there. He was less comfortable with this. As a matter of modern psak, Ramosha Feinstein said that one should not do so. That was Ramosha's position. Rav Yitzchak Halevi Herzog in Psakim Uksavim, it's source number 20, said, I don't permit it, but you could note there is the Ravid, who says you can become impure, plus the Urayim, who says that even contact would be okay, plus the Marashdam, who says maybe Kohanim aren't really Kohanim and you have a Svek Sveka. So I'll tell you that a Kohen who does this is not a Chote. I wouldn't call him a sinner for doing this, even though if he asked me what he should do, I would not advise him to do so. That's the position of Rav Herzog. And then Rav Gorin said you could rely on the position of the Rambam about Ohel for the sake of Parnasa, for the sake of making a living, that there are leniencies, but no one really wants to employ them. What about a paramedic? What about a nurse? So the Nishmas Avram, Rabbi Dr. Avram Sofer Avram, I brought it here in Source 21, says that it's permitted so long as he can ascertain that he won't be required to become tamei, to become impure, unless he's working on somebody who's dangerously ill. In other words, if he's working on a patient who needs him to save his life, then he keeps right on working. But he has to know that he could be allowed to exempt himself if he was in a situation where someone else was taking care of it and he wasn't needed. Then he's willing to let you. His case is working for Magen David Adom. He would be allowed to go to work there. Rav Moshe Feinstein in Igros Moshe, Yeredeya, also said that if, as a condition of your work, you could leave if there was a Jewish corpse there, such that you could become impure, and you're dealing outside of Israel where it's not as likely that will even happen, then he says that's okay. He adds in another caveat. The poskim generally add in another caveat, which is, are you able to close the door of the room that you're working in? And I'm going to explain that in a few minutes. Okay, if anyone has to leave, I apologize for running over. There was just so much here to discuss, but I'm not offended if you do. That's our first issue. Our second issue, treating a patient who is a goses. Everything from here will be a lot quicker than what we said until now. You can see because we're up to source 22 out of 26. Treating a patient who is a goses. What about the doctor who is a kohen? However it happened, he went to medical school. He is now summoned to treat somebody who is already at the end, as we understand it medically. So can I make the argument, well, yeah, but you could extend his life a little longer? Or do I say he really shouldn't, he really should not be there? So Tosfos in Nida, it's source number 22, says we absolutely break Shabbos. He's not talking about impurity, he's talking about breaking Shabbos. He says we break Shabbos for someone who's a goses, for someone who is in that stage, even though you'll say, well, come on, he's already dying. It doesn't matter, we break Shabbos for him. We write in Source 22, Mikomakom Mishum Pikuach Nefesh Machal in all of us Hashabbos, Af Agav Demuter Lehargo. He's dealing with a unique case. He's dealing with a case of a fetus that's endangering the life of the mother. He says, and here's the key part, the goses bidei adam ahargo patur. If you're dealing with someone who is a goses because somebody attacked him and beat him within an inch of his life, you break Shabbos in order to help him. Kedama parakan israfin, derov goses in lamisa, even though we say that most people who are goses, who are in this stage of at the last minutes, are going to die, nonetheless, Mechal and Olive, as a Shabbos Olive, we violate Shabbos for him. Why? Kedama perak basra de Yuma, de ein mahalchen bebikuach nefesh acha harov. Because the rule in the Gemara in Yuma is we don't go with the majority when it comes to saving lives. I don't care if you tell me that 95% of people who are goses are going to die imminently. We still do what we can to save his life. That's his, hang on one second, that's the argument of Tosfos, and the argument then is that the Kohen should be no different. He should be allowed to go work on this person.
What if it's not to extend the line, but to make him more comfortable?
Right, so what if you're dealing with just making him more comfortable? So the answer would seem to be that would be a problem for the Kohen, but the argument could be made that it would not be. The reason I say that is because there is a position brought by Moshe Feinstein and others that alleviating pain is also considered medical treatment, in the sense that it makes him stronger and better able to fight whatever it is that he's dealing with. So the argument could be made. I'm not going to go there right now because it's a little more involved discussion, but it is an interesting possibility. The Shulchan Aruch says we violate Shabbos for an ill person who is found merutzatz, really beaten and run through. Nonetheless, we still do it. So it would seem that the Kohen can go to him and treat him. The problem begins with a sefer called the Tshuvos Beis Yaakov, who argues that it's not true. He showed that there are cases in which we don't follow the majority regarding pikuach nefesh, and then he throws in something which is brand new, svara mechudeshes, as the poskim say, a brand new idea. He says, look, the fact that we are allowed, halachically, to remove factors that are preventing death, meaning if someone is dying, and there's something that's keeping him from dying, not that it's nourishing him and providing better health, but it's simply keeping him from dying. The Shulchan Aruch's case, there's a hammer banging outside his window, and that's distracting him. And there are all sorts of discussions about what that means. But the point is, if there are factors preventing him from dying, we are allowed to remove them. That shows, he says, that we are not supposed to slow down death once it's happening. That's the novel position of the Tshuvos Beis Yaakov. Every posek under the sun rejects what he's saying. The Tshuvos Yaakov, the Chasim Sofer, the Gesher HaChayim on the issues of taking care of the deceased, of someone who's ill, the Tzitz Eliezer, their position is, you take care of him, and if the patient goes, then you leave right away. That's all you do. You do whatever you need to do to try to take care of him and extend his life to whatever extent possible, barring, and I'm not discussing the case of end-of-life care for someone who's in great pain, because then the question of whether you're really supposed to be treating him at all is a question in its own right and a subject of its own marathon shear. But one last point within this. What if there are other doctors around? You're a Kohen. You're summoned to deal with a Goses, but there are other doctors around who could also treat. Normally we say, don't worry about there being other doctors, maybe you are the one who is uniquely capable. Will I apply that in this case? So the Chasim Sofer said no. The Chasim Sofer said, if we believe that the prohibition against becoming Tamei is overridden, it's dechuya, but not entirely lifted by saving this person's life, then it will be better for another doctor to be the one to treat him. There's a great debate on this. The Pesachei Tshuva quotes this, and he says it's nonsense. He says maybe you'll be the doctor who will really save him. The others disagree. The Shevet Halevi, which I brought you in Source 23, ends up saying that if there is any reason to believe that you, the Kohen, might be the better doctor, then you should be the one to do it. If there's any reason under the sun to believe that. Otherwise, better to let the other doctor be the one to take care of the Goses. That's on that issue.
Whether the Goses is Jewish or not Jewish.
Well, if you're going to be in contact. If he's not Jewish, then you're more likely to treat him. If you can do it without contact, you're dealing with an IV or whatever it is, then you can go in because he's not communicating to Mabohel anyway. There's more to say on that, but that's the simple, straightforward read. There is an interesting mitigating factor, though, and this goes back to my vignette about the doctor who is now working in the hospital. He's chief neurologist. He's not leaving his position tomorrow. What is he able to do to mitigate his situation? Similar to the point about, generally, we're not dealing with this issue in great depth, but the Kohen who's a patient in a hospital. Is there anything that he's able to do to mitigate his situation? And the answer, believe it or not, is close the door to his room. There's a position of the Shach. It's in Source 24, but I'm going to say it outside. But the Shach's position is this. If there's a dead body in one room, and there is more than a tefach, which is 3.6 inches, of space beside the dead body in that room, which clearly there is, right? Then the tumah is contained within that room. The tumah is said to spread to the space through which you're going to take the body when the body is removed from the hospital. However, any adjacent ohel, any adjacent space, only receives impurity rabbinically, as long as the door is closed. You open the door, and now you're a part of that stairwell hallway space. So he says, keep the door closed, to the extent possible, in case there is a maze there, will need to be transported out through the hallway. So that's the Shach's idea. The Magen Avraham is absolutely shocked in source number 25. He says, of course, he says it's a Del Raisa, that it's going to spread no matter what. Nonetheless, and it's true, many poskims oppose it, but in cases of necessity, it is mentioned. So, for example, the Nishmas Avraham says, if someone is in a Kohen is in an apartment building, and finds out that somebody died, so he should keep his apartment door closed until the mace is out of the building, And that way, minimize the violation of the impurity. The Nishmas Avraham also quotes it regarding a patient in the hospital getting treated. He says, keep the door closed to the extent possible. There's a great machlokas about whether he can leave his room to go to daven in the hospital shul, because it's for the sake of a mitzvah. On the other hand, he could be worsening his impurity. It's a great discussion, and I can give you more sources on it. But that's one thing that a doctor would be able to do. A doctor who's a kohen is working in a hospital setting should really keep his door closed to the extent possible, and that may mitigate it based on the position of the shach. The last point, and then I'll do a quick summary. But last point, the duchening discussion. Take a look, please, at source number 26 from the Shulchan Aruch. Kohen shahara ges hanefesh. If a kohen kills somebody, afilu shogeg b'shogeg, even accidentally, lo yisa es kapav afilu asa tshuva. He should not duchen, even if he repented from whatever it was that he had done. This is based on a Tosfos, this position. And the reason it's even if he repented is because it's not about having sinned. This happened accidentally. It's simply that the hands that were involved in someone's death should not be the ones raised to bless the people at Birchas Kohanim. The Ramah says, V'yesh omrim dimasa tshuva no se kapov. Some say that if he repented, he can duchen. V'yesh lahakel abali tshuva shlolin odalas bifnein. He says, we should be lenient for people. You can imagine the embarrassment for the Kohen who's in shul. Everybody knows he's a Kohen, and he doesn't duchen. And everybody knows it's because, you know, he was treating a patient on the operating table and the patient died. It's horrific. So he says, yeah, he says, we're makel for bali tshuva v'hachi nog, and that's the practice. However, the key point is really the next line in the Shulchan Aruch. Mol tinok umes, God forbid, a moel does a bris and the child dies. No se es kapov. He still duchens. What's the difference between this and anybody else who did it b'shogeg? So the Nishmas Avram quotes with Shlomo Zalman Orbach to explain that here he was doing it for the sake of a mitzvah. It wasn't just that he accidentally killed somebody, he was trying to do a mitzvah. The case of the doctor who's doing the surgery, he's engaged in trying to do a mitzvah. It's like the bris milah case, and therefore, tshuva or no tshuva, it's not even relevant. It's not the case of lamed hey, it's the case of lamed vav. It's someone who was engaged in doing a mitzvah. The patient knew the risks and said, I want you to operate on me. So assuming that there was no negligence involved, we're not talking about a case where he was simply delinquent. The surgeon who lost somebody in the operating table would indeed continue to do Birchas Kohanim. The whole tshuva discussion is not relevant. So again, just to sign, there's a lot more we could have discussed. There's a whole discussion about reattaching limbs for people and the limb communicating impurity. There's a whole discussion about bikur cholim and whether stomach kohen is allowed to go into the hospital to visit somebody who is ill. There's a lot more that we could discuss. But just to do a brief wrap-up, we have a debate between the Rambam and the Ravid based on their understanding of the Gemara and Nazir, possibly also based on their understanding of Maseches Samachos, as to whether a kohen is allowed to become tamei nowadays, when Kohanim are Tamei anyway. The Ravid, it is alleged by the Chasam Sofer, recanted, but a closer examination of the source indicates that he was not actually recanting, both because he was speaking about the Rif's position, not his own, and because he actually wrote that before he wrote his comments on the Rambam. So he seems not to have been recanting. It is also likely, as Ramosha understands, that he meant a Kohen may become Tamei, even lechatchila, even initially. That was point number one. Point number two is that we generally assume that the body of an akum will communicate tumah only in only via contact and not via ohel, not via a root structure. There's even a lenient position that says it doesn't communicate tumah on contact. Granted that in Shulchan Aruch we say better to avoid being under the same roof with the body anyway. Nonetheless, there is this position, and it is brought into play. Third, the question of whether Kohanim exist today who have proper lineage, such that I'll say I know for sure he's a Kohen. The general assumption is that yes, we assume he's a Kohen, although there is that aspect of it, the view potentially to argue that we can't prove he's a Kohen. When it comes to studying and going to medical school, the poskim are generally opposed. with the understanding that we're not going to call him a sinner for doing so, because there are all of these different aspects to it. The Malami Lahoel, Rav David Zvi Hoffman, was asked, can you give him a Kohen Aliyah anymore? And his answer was, you should try, if possible, to teach him that he shouldn't do what he's doing if you know he's actually coming in contact with the dead. However, he wouldn't say that this is somebody who has to be drummed out. That far, he's not willing to go, because it's not explicit in the Torah, and because you have these other arguments that could be brought. The paramedic, who is less guaranteed to come in contact with the dead, the poskim tend to be more lenient, assuming that he can get a guarantee that he'll be able to get out of tamei situations when they arise. The issue of treating the patient who is a goses, so the poskim generally say that he should go, take care of him, and then leave as soon as he can, unless he knows there's another doctor who can do it, who is equally available, and who will give him as good or better treatment. If there's any reason to doubt that, then he should go himself. The doctor in the hospital, or the patient for that matter, should keep his door closed at all times, relying on the shach. At all times, obviously, doesn't mean at all times. They can bring food to the patient, someone can come in to visit him, and so on. And in terms of duchening, we assume that the kohen who lost a patient is allowed to duchen. Questions? Remaining questions?